bust.
Remington sat across from Hunter in a bistro in Hollywood.
The owners of the vineyard surrounding the property that still belongs to your wife had nothing to say about the property owners, other than nasty things that I couldn't completely translate. The general feel was one of disdain. As for Picano's family, there is a mother who refuses to acknowledge that she had a son, and a grandfather was just as mortified that anyone asked about him. A younger sister, however, seemed to know she had a brother once, a rich one. But from what I could tell, she knew nothing about money in any account.
How could you tell they didn't know about the money? Hunter asked.
No connections. Picano cut family ties early on. The only one who even cared I was asking around was the sister. If I had to guess, Picano still had a relationship with her at his death, but she was a college student when he died. She's in debt to the tune of 40 grand, a drop in the hat of what is in her brother's account. If she had access, my guess is she wouldn't have the debt.
Hunter agreed.
So no family involvement.
Exactly.
Which leaves those he was dealing drugs with.
Remington shook his head.
Dealing? No. Smuggling. Different ball game. The amount of drugs this douchebag was shoveling proved he was working directly with the main guy, whoever this guy is.
I need a name, Hunter told him.
Don't we all? The guy they caught alive, Stephen Legger, slipped and fell on a knife in prison before he made trial. Picano's onboard staff were just as lucky with their short lives. Whomever Picano was smuggling with didn't take prisoners.
The chill in the room dropped to sub-temperatures. No prisoners. He had arms that reached into the prison system and took out his enemies. How easy a target would Gabby be if this man wanted her dead?
I need to step up Gabby's security, he muttered to himself.
What's that?
Remington asked.
Nothing. Listen, we need to find this man from a different angle. Drug smugglers from this part of the world are rich, right? Most of them are part of known cartels. We look into the players and reference those who dealt with people like Picano.
Remington lifted both hands in the air and shook his head.
You don't pay me enough, Blackwell. As it was, I felt eyes on me the entire time I traversed that forsaken country. I don't need a target on my back by peeking into a multitude of drug runners. I'd tap into all those politicians you're becoming so chummy with. Chances are someone in your circle knows a name or two. Isn't that what I pay you for?
He shrugged.
Your friends won't talk to me. I can tap into security files, but that wouldn't be legal.
Remington lifted a mocking brow.
You're not suggesting I do that, are you?
Hunter wouldn't direct the man to an illegal act. Not with his words, in any event.
Would I ask that of you?
Remington's smirk said it all. Even if Remington had a name, Hunter would need to use his connections to keep the drug smuggler away from his home. The thought of reversing the passwords that locked him out crossed Hunter's mind. Chances were, however, Mr. Smuggler would avoid touching the money to prevent a trace. Or worse, look for deeper pockets and silence money. The last thing Hunter's reputation needed right now was that of a man who gave in to blackmail. Hunter pushed from his desk and stood.
I need dirt on Sheila Watson.
He pulled a notepad off his desk and scribbled the address he had for the mother of Noah's son.
I have someone working on current habits. What I need is her past. And keep an ear out for Picano's partners.
Remington tucked the note in his pocket and offered a mock salute.
You're the boss.
Once Hunter was alone in his office, he lifted the phone and called his new security.
McBain.
Neil answered the phone with his name.
It's Blackwell. I want another set of eyes on Gabby.
There was silence on the other end of the line.
Did you hear me? Why? I think she needs it. You know, Blackwell, I've been doing this a long time. I'm sure you have enemies, but if you think there is one in particular we should be looking out for, I need to know who they are.
Hunter felt a headache coming on.
I don't have a name, Neil. Tell me what you're afraid of. It's not about me.
More silence.
It's Gabby's ex. He's dead. Yeah, but whoever he worked with isn't. Wait, is there an actual threat? What aren't you telling me?
Neil asked. Hunter hadn't told Neil about the bank accounts and drug smugglers, when they set up Gabby's security.
A hunch. One I have to listen to.
Crickets filled the line for the third time. Finally, Neil gave an ultimatum.
We can do this one of two ways. You start talking now, or I put my very persistent wife on Gabby's doorstep until we have answers.
Hunter shook off his frustration with Neil's tenacity before he opened his mouth.
I found two offshore accounts.
By the time he was finished delivering the information, Neil's silence was like talking to a rock, and Hunter became increasingly uneasy.
Why didn't you tell me this sooner?
Neil asked.
I wanted to deal with this myself. I found the more people that know the details of my life, the more tabloid exposure I find myself explaining. I can deal with me. It's Gabby I'm worried about. She doesn't need the grief of her past haunting her. Doesn't sound like she has a choice. I'll put another man on her while I make a few calls. I'm also going to put a tracking device on her car. It's in the shop.
Neil's short laugh made Hunter pause.
Why am I not surprised? She backed into a pole, he found himself explaining. Yeah, I'm sure she did. It's better this way. I'll have one of my guys following and one behind the wheel. A personal driver doesn't attract attention like a bodyguard. And the less questions the tabloids will ask. Good. Then I'll make a few phone calls. My friend in the Coast Guard might have a name to attach to Picanos.
Hunter wasn't expecting that.
A name is all I need.
Neil huffed.
You need more than a name. And you need to start putting some trust in those around you. Trust is earned. Agreed. One thing you can count on when it comes to Gabby, or any of the women in our circle of friends, we will all step up. I'll keep that in mind. Good.
Neil disconnected the call and Hunter found himself staring out the window of his office. They'd owned the house for over 3 weeks but were embarking on their first night in it. The kitchen and the bedroom were the main priority, at least according to Gabby. The rest of the house could take shape over time. With Meg safely tucked into a plane flying back home, Gabby felt some of the weight of responsibility lifted. She hated the relief that trickled in after Jordan's passing. The guilt was easier when she noticed Samantha returning to her normal self. Gabby knew it would take time, but the end was simply too difficult for everyone, especially Jordan. The one thing that stuck with Gabby long after the service was over and the house was clean, the Harrisons' extended family, their friends, and those that Gabby now considered her friends were some of the most genuine people she'd ever met. They stuck with Samantha and Blake, took care of them and their two children, did everything so they didn't have to. Having grown up with only her brother and mother most of her life, Gabby was humbled by the friendships she'd managed in her short time in California. She checked the baked ziti one last time and opened a bottle of Cabernet to breathe while she waited for Hunter to come home. The alarm system in the home told her the gate allowing cars in had been opened. She took a moment to light the candles on the kitchen counter. The kitchen and dining room tables were on order. The living room furniture was nothing more than several pictures on her phone that she couldn't decide between. The house had a den, and Gabby decided Hunter was on his own for that space. She'd never furnished a bedroom, let alone an entire house. Having a blank checkbook and tastes that ranged from island simple to elegant Italian castles, Gabby was torn. The sound of Hunter's dress shoes against the wood floor announced his arrival.
What is that wonderful smell?
She blew out the match as Hunter rounded the corner of the kitchen, flowers in one hand, his jacket in the other. Gabby leaned a hip against the counter and smiled. Hunter stopped before he entered the kitchen.
Hi, honey. I'm home.
The laughter that erupted wasn't expected.
I couldn't stop myself,
he said. She kept giggling. I see the buses missed their mark again. Now he laughed as he walked into the middle of the kitchen, tossed his jacket and the flowers on the counter, and captured her around the waist. This was all they'd really managed over the past few weeks. A kiss. Yet each one was charged and full. Each one kept her up at night. When Hunter drew his lips away, he hummed.
Hi.
Hi. She smoothed back a lock of hair from his forehead.
This is a first.
What is?
Walking into the front door of my home and finding a beautiful woman cooking.
Our home, she corrected. And good. She pushed away. Maybe tomorrow I won't ask that a bus take my blackmailing husband out. Hunter placed a mocking hand to his chest.
I'm touched.
Gabby lifted a brow. Not yet. His smirk dropped, and something a whole lot sexier took its place. She turned on her heel and made a show of checking the ziti in the oven. Hunter grabbed her from behind, turned her around so fast she couldn't think, and pinned her against the counter. He robbed her of coherent thought as he tested the endurance of her molars with his tongue. Out of control, Hunter was a force, one she loved to unleash. Something soft hit the floor, and Hunter's arms were molding her body to his. The buzzer on the oven didn't break their connection. It had been too long, and they were both hungry. She slapped the oven, cracked it open before Hunter dragged her away from her dinner. Halfway up the stairs, he stopped trying to kiss her, leaned over, and tossed her over his shoulder. A little breathless and laughing more than she ever had, he tossed her on the bed and pounced. She welcomed him into her arms, curled her legs around him, and rolled until she was straddling his hips. His hands traveled inside her shirt and played with the edges of her bra. Gabby tugged on his tie without releasing the knot as Hunter rid her of her blouse. She pulled the tie from over his head and slid it over hers. He growled.
That tie is forever branded.
He used it to pull her close as he kissed her senseless. He was hard, and she was hungry. Her bra found the floor, his shirt, until only the tie remained.
I need to be inside you, Gabby.
Please. She reached for a box of condoms she'd bought and placed under his pillow. Let's burn through these. Hunter's smile filled his gray eyes. His laughter echoed in the nearly empty room. Then he was there, filling her, completing her. Seemed every time they'd managed to make love since Dallas, her resolve to stay distant became nothing more than a memory. In Hunter's arms, she was alive. Loneliness left her alone, and passion took its place. When he'd rocked her universe twice, Gabby wasn't hungry at all. Later, the candles were glowing along with the fire Hunter had started in the master bedroom. She wore his shirt, his tie, and he donned boxers while they enjoyed her slightly dry ziti and a lovely bottle of wine.
A kitchen and a bedroom. It's all we need.
Hunter shoved another forkful of pasta into his mouth. You could be onto something there. He leaned forward and ran his finger along her lip before licking the sauce away.
House parties would be easier without a mess of furniture.
True, but where would people sit?
Bring your own lawn chair.
Gabby imagined the massive living room filled with wicker and plastic. I don't think that will work. He took another bite.
This is so good.
It's dry.
It's perfect.
It would have been perfect if we'd eaten it an hour ago. Hunter wiggled his eyebrows. Gabby shook her head and tried not to blush. We need to make a decision on the furniture, Gabby insisted. He broke off a piece of bread before popping it into his mouth.
What's the hurry?
Child Protective Services? He stopped chewing and stared. I've been doing some research. As much as you need to find Hayden's mother unfit, Child Protective Services is going to use that same microscope on us. A furnished and safe home is only the beginning. Hunter leaned back, unconcerned.
Furniture doesn't determine a decent home.
Neither does money. Statistically, the mother is often given custody, even when the scale dips in the father's favor, which means we need to dip that scale deep.
I have the deeper pockets.
Possession is 9/10 of the law. Hayden is in his biological mother's custody.
A biological father has rights.
Gabby picked at her food while she talked. Your case for full custody is stronger if she's unfit and you're a saint. That's why we needed to get married, right?
I'm not a saint.
Gabby stopped chewing and stared. Thank you for the clarification that this woman doesn't need. Point being, you're too rich to leave loose unsaintly ends, and she's too self-centered to think you're going to petition for custody. There's only one factor I don't think either of us has considered. Hunter pushed his empty plate away.
What's that?
Noah. He could swoop in and claim Hayden as his, once he realizes this isn't going the way he wants it.
I hadn't considered that.
The man suddenly starts appearing wherever we are. He has to be on to something.
He's pushing my buttons. Trying to look like the upstanding guy and me the unreasonable ass. Not much has changed since we were kids.
Didn't your parents ever clue into the truth?
We were lumped into the same person most of the time. By the time Noah showed his real drive, my father was clued out, my mother was gone, and I was determined to live life differently. I'd always been one of two.
A lot of people would want that.
Not when one of the two is a complete emotional opposite. You'd think identical twins would have the same personality. We don't. I had the drive to become self-made. He had the drive to let someone else do everything for him. Worse, he thinks I owe him simply because of our DNA. I never have understood that mindset.
When do you think you'll be prepared to petition the court for custody?
I'm looking for a couple more nails, and then we can move. 2 weeks, maybe.
Before Christmas?
Christmas?
His eyes were wide. Yeah, you know, that big holiday at the end of December?
I know what Christmas is. I just haven't thought about it.
Neither had she. Not until earlier in the day when she noticed lights going up around the city. What do you normally do for the holidays? He shrugged.
Company Christmas party. A few I can't get out of events.
I mean, on Christmas. Without family. When he didn't have a quick reply, she felt instant remorse for asking the question. I'm sorry I asked. Hunter shook his head.
Christmas is a holiday for close friends and family, both of which you know I don't have. I don't accept invitations from my associates. I keep my employees at a distance.
What about your father? Is he so awful? Hunter rolled off the bed, took their plates with him.
He's a hermit, a shell of a man he once was. 10 minutes in the room with a man is about all I can take.
He placed their plates on a cardboard box that hadn't yet been unpacked and proceeded to stoke the fire. Your father was once a successful businessman, right?
He was. He didn't get rich, but he managed. My mother thought he was better off than he was. Insisted on fancy schools, which is where I met Blake.
And Gwen?
Blake didn't let any of us around his sister. He was known to break the noses of her dates. Noah took an interest, and that's about the time I ducked out of their lives. Last thing I wanted was Blake mistaking him for me.
How is it I didn't know this?
Noah backed off quickly. Our mother left and took most of my father's money with her. I saw an instant decline in my father's will to move forward. Noah took our dad's depression and worked it to get whatever he wanted.
And you held up the pieces.
I wouldn't say that. I made my own way. I'd been accepted into the colleges I wanted. I moved. Learned after 3 semesters that I didn't need a degree to run a successful business.
Wait, I saw a degree in your portfolio.
Honorary. They hand them out like candy if you write a big enough check.
That's crazy. So you dropped out of college and set the world on fire, burning bridges along the way.
Making money, not friends, was my goal.
Mission accomplished. He moved back to the bed and sat.
Christmas was my sacrifice.
She fought the frown on her face. The ache in her chest for those missed holidays tightened. I guess we'll simply have to make this year all the better. Hunter reached out and played with a lock of her hair.
If you want to spend it with your family.
She caught his hand. I don't know where we will spend Christmas, but I don't see any reason why we can't be together.
Unless I screw up between now and then.
Then don't screw up.
I'm not sure that's possible.
Try. Chapter 24. Hunter sat across from Frank Adams and his squad of lawyers. Travis and Hunter's team sat beside him. The meeting was a formality. In truth, the contracts could be signed with each of them in their respective states, but they agreed face-to-face was better. Hunter hedged on the final agreement, giving Frank a larger cut and enough say in the oil sections to prevent a hostile takeover, which had been part of the long-term plan. So long as Frank didn't bankrupt Hunter's efforts, they could commingle. He couldn't help but wonder if marriage had made him soft. He wouldn't have agreed to a larger cut a year ago.
Are we ready to do this? Frank asked. My T's are crossed, if yours are.
Hunter reached out a hand and Travis placed a pen into it. His lawyer opened each page, told Hunter where to initial and sign before turning the document over to Frank. The signing took 30 minutes to complete before both of them stood and shook hands over the table.
I hope you have time for a liquid lunch.
Frank proposed. Hunter agreed with a nod.
One martini. I told Gabby I'd be home for dinner.
as you trained already, does she? You've met my wife, Frank. It's not a hardship.
Frank patted him on the back as they left the lawyers and associates in the conference room.
I'm surprised, Frank said over his martini. Minnie insisted you'd give a little more, and I was convinced you were stuck on the original offer.
I was stuck on the original offer,
Hunter admitted.
I even considered pulling the deal. What stopped you?
He'd asked himself that question a lot. The answer was simple.
Marriage.
And family. Hayden, a figure who had yet to make his way into his life.
I want to work smarter, Frank. This merger, if managed properly, is going to make us very wealthy men.
You're already wealthy.
Hunter offered half a smile.
Can you ever have enough?
Frank sucked back his drink, waved to the bartender for another.
I don't know. I'll tell you when I get there. We don't have to make a decision now, but I'd like to open offices here. A location dedicated solely to this project.
You're considering relocating?
Frank asked.
No. I'll oversee my operation from L.A. I'd place a point man, when I trust, on this end. There's going to be a lot of activity in the beginning, probably for the next 5 to 10 years. Flying back and forth. You don't have to explain. I have a wife. Just wait until you and Gabby have a child. Complicates everything. I'm sure it does. I like the idea, Hunter. Let me know what I can do here.
I will.
The entire living room was filled with the fresh scent of pine. Two guys hoisted the tree into the middle of the room and awaited Gabby's instruction. She only had half a day to complete her task. Christmas was still 2.5 weeks away, but Mrs. Claus was busy with a house full of elves. A crew was unloading her selections for dining room, living room, 2 guest bedrooms, the remainder of the master suite, and the beginnings of a nursery. People scrambled in every direction. On top of the furniture, Gabby insisted that Christmas arrive early. She'd hired a professional decorator, one Samantha had used in the past. There had to be a dozen college-aged kids working like the crew at the White House.
Mrs. Blackwell?
Felicia ran the crew of decorators and called for her attention.
Is this where you want the tree?
The 20-foot Douglas fir was still miles from scraping the ceiling.
Mind the fireplace. I don't want to burn the place down before we have a chance to host our first party.
Felicia directed those holding the tree to move the tree closer to the window. Gabby turned to the sound of her name.
Yes, Andrew?
You need to sign off on the bedroom delivery.
She followed him into the hall, while one of the many workers wiggled around her, lamp in hand. The first guest room was set, sans the final touches. Bags of delivered bedding sat in a heap in the corner. The bed was set, tables, the flat screen was fixed to the wall, and an attendant from the electronic department making sure it was operable. Gabby ran her hand over the iron bed with a smile. It's perfect. She signed the papers shoved in front of her, and the delivery crew moved on to the next room.
I'm almost done here, Mrs. Blackwell. Where is the next one going?
Gabby pointed toward the retreating crew.
Just follow them.
The 20-something kid winked and continued to wire the television. Cooper caught her as she entered the dining room. 3 smaller pine trees were in the corner, all in varied sizes. 2 college kids were placing lights and giggling.
Neil is on the phone. He wants to speak with you.
Gabby rolled her eyes but took her security guard's phone from his hand.
Yes, Neil?
My last count was 26 breaches in security running around the house.
I have a crew of 5 more arriving any minute to climb on ladders and set up the outside lights, too.
Gabby, this isn't a joke.
It's one day, Neil. One day with so many people running around, there is no possible way I'm going to be harmed. Cooper is right here. Solomon is outside watching everyone as they come and go.
26 to 2.
The lights on the smaller trees were plugged in.
Oh, those are lovely. Thanks, girls.
Gabby?
Mostly college kids, Neil. Happy for the temporary work. I'm fine.
Mrs. Blackwell.
Gabby swiveled toward her name.
I gotta go.
She handed the phone back to Cooper and went back to the job at hand.
Andrew, can you be sure and bring out a tub of bottled water? Maybe we should have the deli send over some sandwiches.
Andrew turned away. Phone in hand. Now that the tree was in the right position, the living room furniture was being bumped through the mess of people and set in place.
More to the right. The men shuffling the furniture didn't argue, merely moved it and sat back, waiting for her direction.
Mrs. Blackwell?
The heavy accent of one of the delivery men called her name. Yes? She looked up at him.
We have Garland in the truck. For the doorway, maybe?
Gabby glanced at Felicia, who offered an enthusiastic nod. Sounds good to me.
Lunch will be here in 40 minutes.
You're a doll, Andrew, Gabby told him. The older man crossed his arms over his chest.
He's going to love this.
Another set of lights was going up over the fireplace. Everyone deserves Christmas. 2 hours later, Andrew flagged her down as she made beds.
His flight just left Dallas.
We have 4 hours.
I'd shoot for 3. Get everyone out of here and a little time to clean up.
Gabby left the room, clapping her hands. We only have 3 hours, folks. Let's get this done. She stepped outside to check the progress on the lights and let the rest of the crew know about the deadline. The tree delivery men were finishing the placement of the garland. Not the best job, but it looked like Felicia was close by to nip and tuck bows and lights into the spray.
It's nice, yes?
Yes. She didn't have time to debate, simply moved on. Solomon will make sure you're taken care of.
The security guard, Signora.
She caught Solomon talking with one of the men working on the outside lights. Him, she pointed.
Right. Security.
Thanks again, she said, before moving to the next eruption. In 2.5 hours, Felicia and her crew were cleaning each room as they exited it. The house took on an elegant holiday appearance, with silver and white blanketing the formal dining room. Silver, white, and splashes of burgundy emptied into the living room. Garlands mixed with lights laced the banister of the stairway. The tree glittered with glass bulbs, crystal ornaments, and 2 sets of lights. One clear, the other red. Garlands and bows, and a 5-foot Saint Nick welcomed those at the front door. Gabby signed off the lighting crew, delighted with their work. I can't wait for the sun to retire for the night.
My people will call you in a few days to schedule the day to take it all down after the first.
Perfect. Solomon followed the lighting crew out to pick Hunter up from the airport. Andrew met the caterer at the gate and brought in the special dinner Gabby had ordered for their private celebration. Felicia and the remainder of the crew exited the house at exactly 3 hours from the time Gabby said they needed to finish. Gabby kissed the woman's cheek. I couldn't have done it without you. It was crazy in there for a while, but I think it turned out pretty spectacular. It jumps off the pages of a magazine. Enjoy your holiday, Mrs. Blackwell. One by one, the trucks and vans left the property. The outside lights were starting to glow as the sun started to fade. The three left standing took in the outside of the house. The shrubs twinkled, the eaves took on larger bulbs, mainly clear, but a splash of red adorned the columns, reminding Gabby of a candy cane. There was just enough color to add fun to the elegant feel of the decorations.
Pizza and beer in the guest house,
Andrew called to Cooper.
I'll take you up on the pizza once Hunter arrives.
Thank you, guys. I know that was nuts, but just look at this. Cooper winked.
Looks good, Mrs. B.
Diaz despised the States. Too many eyes, too many ears, not enough guns. Raul walked into the sparsely furnished home 1 block over from the Blackwells.
Well?
Raul pointed both index fingers in the air and walked over to the computer.
We're all set.
The cocky attitude Diaz could do without. Problem was, Raul was good at what he did when he wasn't strung out. Seemed he'd been off the shit for a couple of weeks, or at least cutting down. The computer fired up and audio feeds buzzed through the speakers. Normally, Diaz wouldn't have traveled all the way to California to retrieve his money. Hitmen were good for something. When he'd learned how deep Mrs. Picano's pockets had become, however, he made an adjustment to his plans.
Our video feed smack in the middle of the living room, audio everywhere else.
The computer was a grid of boxes. Raul's fingers flew over the computer, pointing, clicking, typing in a command. The video feed came to life in living color. A tall, slender woman waltzed into the frame and walked right past.
Is that her?
Yep, Mrs. Blackwell.
Diaz lifted an eyebrow. He had to give credit to a dead man. Alonzo lucked out with that one before he managed to get dead. Raul pulled up an audio feed deeper in the house. The sound of running water met their ears.
The house is completely wired. Massive security system. She has two bodyguards and the butler lives in the guest house.
Diaz didn't think it would be easy.
Did you clean up your loose ends?
Raul pointed his damn index fingers at him again and winked.
Now we just have to wait.
Great. Diaz wasn't a patient man. Hunter had his head buried in an email on his open laptop when Solomon slowed the car at the gate. He looked up briefly, returned to the mail, then snapped his eyes back out the window. The hair on his arms stood up, and an unexpected chill took the form of a tsunami over his skin.
Whoa.
Solomon watched him through the rearview mirror. He absently closed the computer and moved it off his lap as Solomon brought the car to a stop. In a daze, Hunter slid from the back seat and gawked. He hardly recognized the house. Lights exploded everywhere with tasteful design and elegance.
Gabby, he whispered.
The giddy excitement normally reserved for children grew as he approached the front door. He stepped into the foyer, smiled at the Santa that greeted him. A high table that hadn't been there when he left warmed the space. The crackle of a fire and the scent of pine met the visual feast as he rounded the corner to the great room. Christmas had arrived. He ran his hand over the back of the sofa Gabby had chosen. The closer he moved toward the tree, the better it smelled. There were even wrapped gifts under it. How had she done so much in so little time? Twisting his head around the feat of creating a home where it was only walls and empty spaces hours before was impossible. Do you like it? Gabby's musical voice interrupted his thoughts. Dressed in a soft white silk jumpsuit, Gabby watched him from across the room.
You did all this?
She tilted her head. Me and a small army. I wanted to surprise you.
Goal obtained.
He turned to the tree again.
It's real.
Of course. He caught the dark orbs of her eyes and crooked his finger in her direction.
Come here.
When she was close enough to touch, he placed a hand on the side of her face.
It's the nicest thing anyone has ever done for me.
It's just a tree.
It's so much more. You know it. I know it.
She leaned into his palm and he kissed her. Gabby softened, parted her lips, and let him pull her closer. He broke the kiss and leaned his forehead against hers.
I don't deserve you.
Gabby tugged on his hand. Come on. I have more to show you. The master suite was complete. Bedside tables, a plush chaise for two by the fireplace. Potted plants filled empty space. Gabby pulled him into several rooms, all of them completely furnished. She muttered about art for the walls, suggested a trip to Italy to find the right pieces. The last stop, however, was the best. The smell of fresh paint told him more had been done to the last room than the others. A fresh white coat of paint wrapped around the wainscoting with a light blue topping. The ceiling had fluffy clouds. A crib sat center with a dangling moon and star mobile, just waiting for tiny, eager eyes. A changing table, a dresser, and a gliding chair with a large stuffed bear sat to the side. Not only had Gabby embraced the idea of Hayden being a part of their life, she'd taken it to a very real level. Say something, she told him.
I don't know what to say.
She came up from behind him and wrapped her arms around his waist. Every child should reach for the sky. He glanced up, felt emotion threatening his dry eyes.
This morning, he started, this house was real estate. Tonight it's a home.
Chapter 25. Meg sat at her computer and waited for the internet video feed to go through. Sam answered with a practiced smile. Hello, Meg. There was a sense of relief when Meg noticed a lack of circles under her friend's eyes. You look good. We're doing all right. They talked briefly about the kids, about some of the aftermath of Jordan's passing. News of Meg's pregnancy had spread quickly. I'm happy for you both. You should see my mother-in-law. She's going crazy already. Sam pulled at her mop of red hair and flicked something on her right. So, what's this about a potential client? It was good getting back into business and away from personal drama. She's 34, owns a big chunk of Manhattan, and wants to piss off her ex with a hot younger man. Sam's smile grew into a full-blown laugh. They exchanged information, made notes, and a plan to help Rich in the city find a spouse. This is exactly what I need right now, Sam said when they finished. A challenge. I thought so, too. Meg leaned back in her chair. Do you have another minute? Sure, what's up? It's about Hunter. Sam groaned. I feel like I dropped the ball on that one. I saw the notes in the file. It didn't sound like you approved him as a client at all. I didn't. I was wrapped up when he came to us, told Gabby to take the interview and make a final decision. I never thought she'd approve him, let alone marry the man. That's what Meg thought. If it's any consolation, I haven't seen Gabby this happy since I met her. Sam looked at her through squinted eyes. Really? Meg nodded. The man has an edge, but I like him. Even Val is coming around. Blake said he's unpredictable and savage when it comes to getting what he wants. Criminal? I didn't find anything to put him behind bars. He's too rich to leave a trace, Meg mused. True. He does seem to have Gabby's safety at heart. Neil has set up quite the system at their new place. 2 personal bodyguards. What? Bodyguards? This was news. Sam snapped her lips shut. I thought you knew. Knew what? Why does Gabby need a bodyguard? Sam placed both hands in the air. I hate gossip. Well, you can't stop now. Meg sat forward, watched for any telling signs on Sam's face. Apparently, her late husband set up 2 very large accounts in the name of Mrs. Gabriella Picano. One was actively being used, the other mildly dormant. I'm not sure how she found out about them, but she changed the passwords and locked out whoever was using them. According to Neil, Hunter thinks she's painted a target on her back. And before you ask, no, there hasn't been a threat. Why would Alonzo do that? Who knows? Maybe he thought if there was big money in her name, she was a part of the smuggling. Keep her silent if he'd survived. So who was behind the money going in and out? No idea. Neil told us that Hunter has investigators on it. New worry for her sister-in-law surfaced. If it's drug money, she could be set up. End up in jail. Someone would have to know about it and want to hold that over her. Blackmail. The 2 of them were lost in their own thoughts for a minute, then caught each other's eyes through the monitor. Blackmail her into, let's say, marriage? You don't think... Sam cut her own words off. Oh, no. Meg hated where her thoughts went. It makes sense. Damn it, I really want to like the man. Sam was twisting her hair now. But why? What was the big friggin' hurry for Hunter to marry? Why would he blackmail a stranger into marriage in the first place? The baby? Which is the most unselfish thing I've heard of. It was Sam's turn to stare. Baby? What baby? Shit. The cat was out of the crib and crawling up the walls now. Shopping. Nothing like a little retail therapy to pass the time. Gabby walked through the department store, felt the eyes of Solomon on her back. He kept his distance but was always close by. She probably wouldn't notice if she were shopping with a friend, but Gwen was watching over her sick toddler and Judy was at work. Bugging Sam wasn't an option. She'd always found her brother difficult to buy for, but with a baby on the way, the daddy door was open and filling her head with ideas for Christmas gifts. Unable to stop herself, Gabby wandered into the baby department and found a tiny pair of socks and a plush rattle for her unborn niece or nephew. Her gaze traveled to a pair of denim overalls. She turned away. Clothes shopping for Hayden would have to wait. A teddy bear, however, was in order. She shifted the bags in her hands as she exited the store in search of a tie with baby bottles or some such nonsense on it. Gabby glanced over her shoulder, saw Solomon close by. When she turned around, she stopped short. Dark eyes bored into her as the woman slowly approached. Sheila Watson was much more beautiful in person than in her pictures. A little shorter than Gabby, more curves, but nothing remotely close to overweight. The other woman let her eyes draw a slow line up and down Gabby's frame. Instead of shying away, she held her ground and waited to see what the other woman was going to do. Gabby skirted her eyes around Sheila and landed on the chubby cheeks and sleeping frame, tucked into a stroller. Gabby's breath caught in her throat, and her hands ached to touch Hunter's nephew. Sheila's words snapped Gabby's attention back to the woman. You know who I am? Gabby kept silent and waited. He promised to marry me, you know. Is that right? Sheila lifted her chin, or maybe it was her nose. He'll use you like he did me, then throw you away. That was the original plan. My question is, are you as cold as he is? Gabby attempted to keep all emotion from her face and forced her eyes from returning to the baby. Sheila's jaw tightened. He owes me. He owes our son. The anger in Sheila's eyes dimmed quicker than a light switch. If you have one decent bone in your body, you'll convince him to take care of his son. 1,000 different retorts died on Gabby's lips. She bit her lip. Anything she said could tip the woman off to Hunter's intentions. Gabby noted Sheila's hand gripping the strap of her purse, the baby at her side all but forgotten, as the other woman stepped toward her. Shoppers funneled around them, annoyed with their stationary presence in the middle of the mall. Sheila's hard stare returned, and she inched away from Hayden, moved closer to Gabby. Too close. You look like the perfect cold bitch to his bastard. There it was, the unstable part that Hunter talked about. Gabby pivoted but didn't turn her back on the other woman. If you'll excuse me. The welcome voice of Solomon interrupted them.
Mrs. Blackwell?
Sheila placed a smile on her face that hadn't been there before. Already have a toy? Gabby moved to Solomon's side. I'm ready to leave. He placed himself between the two women and nudged her toward the door. We're not done, Sheila called after her. Gabby didn't respond but felt the woman's anger as they walked away.
Who was that?
Solomon asked as they walked into the parking lot. Someone who can't be trusted. If she approaches me again, please step in. He ran his hands through his hair, looked behind them, and walked faster. Once they were in the car, Gabby sucked in a deep breath. Take me to Hunter's office.
You got it, Mrs. B.
Half a mile away from the mall, Solomon said,
I should have jumped in sooner. I failed you.
She could have been a friend. I doubt many assailants are pushing around babies. You had no way of knowing.
It won't happen again.
Gabby tried to put the man at ease. Don't worry about it. Tiffany ushered Gabby into Hunter's office without an announcement. Solomon stayed behind by Tiffany's desk. Hunter's face lit up when she walked into the office. He kept the phone to his ear but waved her over to his side.
That's right. I really don't care how you deal with it. Just deal.
Hunter stood as she approached and wedged herself between his desk and his chair. His hand found her waist and squeezed.
I don't have time right now, Hunter said to whomever he was talking to. Something important just showed up on my desk.
Gabby felt the tension placed by Sheila drift away.
Right. Do it.
Hunter reached around her and hung up the phone before nuzzling her neck.
If it isn't Mrs. Claus, what did I do right to have you visiting me here?
Gabby leaned her head back, liked the feel of his lips on her neck, distracting as it was. It's not for pleasure, I'm sorry to say. He stopped kissing her neck and looked into her eyes.
What's wrong?
Was she so transparent? I met Sheila. The hand holding her waist tightened. His face darkened.
When? Where?
The mall. 30 minutes ago? Hunter set her up on his desk and gripped her knees as she told him about the encounter.
Where the hell was Solomon?
Right there. I didn't call out to him. He had no way of knowing she was a threat.
That's not an excuse.
Yes, it is. Having a bodyguard glued to my side is unnecessary and uncomfortable. She was sizing me up, not assaulting me.
Once we have Hayden, that might change.
The memory of Hayden's tiny face, pouty lips, parted in his sleep, placed a soft smile on her face. I saw him. Hunter paused.
Hayden?
She nodded. He's beautiful, Hunter. He was sleeping in the stroller. I didn't get more than a glimpse before Sheila started in on the ugly.
It's the ugly I'm worried about, Hunter said.
Gabby agreed. Which is why we need to be slow and methodical about this. The woman wasn't right. Pulling Hayden away if she can still manage partial custody would be tragic.
She isn't expecting me to petition for custody. She's expecting a payoff.
Makes me wonder what kind of crazy is going to happen when Hayden is removed as a bargaining chip.
The kind of crazy that requires a bodyguard, or two, or three.
He looked worried. The phone on his desk buzzed. He dropped his hand on the intercom.
Yes, Tiffany.
Sorry to interrupt, but there's an Officer Delgado on the phone.
Did he say what this was regarding?
Something about a missing person report? Gabby shifted as Hunter brought the call to the speaker on his phone.
This is Hunter Blackwell. Mr. Blackwell, thank you for taking a minute to talk to me.
Hunter shrugged and looked at her.
I find when the police call, not talking to them isn't an option.
Delgado offered a short laugh.
True. I'm an investigator with LAPD. We had a missing persons report filed this afternoon on an electrician that was at your residence yesterday and wanted to ask you a few questions.
Gabby sat taller. Who? She asked.
I'm sorry. My wife coordinated the staff at the house yesterday. She's here in my office with me now, and I have you on speaker. Okay, good. Mrs. Blackwell?
This is her. Who is missing?
Name is Mark Collins.
The name sounded familiar. There were over 30 people at the house yesterday, officer. You'll have to forgive me.
He wired your televisions?
Oh, yes, right. Nice boy. He's missing?
He phoned into his employer that he'd completed your job and was returning the work truck, but never showed up.
I'm not sure how I can help. He left in the rush with many others. I couldn't even tell you exactly what time.
Anything you can tell us will help. I'd like the names of those at your house yesterday, too.
Gabby didn't know where to begin. Hunter laid a hand on her thigh.
We will come up with a list and get back to you. Time is our enemy, Mr. Blackwell.
My decorator will have a list of the kids, and the name of the tree lot, the men who set up the lights outside. All those numbers are at home, officer.
As soon as you can get them, Mrs. Blackwell, the better.
Of course. Hunter took Delgado's number and hung up. What do you think that's all about? Gabby asked.
Couldn't tell you. What do you remember about him?
Kid? 23, maybe? Some of the college girls were flirting with him. Felicia kept snapping her fingers, telling them to get on with their work and hook up later. She felt a little smile. You think that's what he did? Skipped out on work? Hooked up with someone?
Possible. What do you want me to do?
She waved him off, stepped around his desk, and grabbed her purse. Nothing. I'll gather the numbers and call Officer Delgado back.
I can be home in 20 minutes if you need me.
She paused at the door with a smile. Andrew met her at the house, phone numbers in hand. Hunter was, above all things, efficient. Once she contacted Delgado and gave him the numbers he needed, she glanced at the other messages Andrew had taken for her for the day. Meg called. Call her back. Meg picked up on the second ring. Hey, Mama, Gabby teased. There was no hello, no how do you do, just a quick and to-the-point question. Hunter blackmailed you, didn't he? Chapter 26. Hunter clicked out of the video conference call with a huge sigh of relief. Travis had found the man embezzling his funds and was working with a team of undercover detectives to catch the man in the act. Hunter was about to give in and ask his wife for her savant help on his accounts, see if Gabby could narrow down the location of the missing funds tighter than his team had managed. Looked like now all he had to do was deliver the good news. He was turning off his computer when Tiffany stacked yet one more unexpected interruption in his day, 15 minutes before she was due to leave the office. Sorry for...
Save it.
Tiffany stepped to a paneled wall and opened a hidden door that housed a flat-screen television. PR called, asked what you wanted to do about this. Hunter stood and waited for Tiffany to turn on the set and bring up the recorded feed someone on their team had captured. The image of Gabby standing beside Sheila in what looked like a sworn enemy stance filled the top right of the screen. The reporter captioned the image with one statement, "The mistress and wife meet." The media had been a thorn for years. Now Gabby was feeling their claws. The reporter went on.
Join us at 7 for the exclusive interview with the daycare worker who claims to be caring for Hunter Blackwell's illegitimate son. Mr. Blackwell recently and quite unexpectedly married a Florida socialite.
The reporter continued to spew his tease for the evening segment. Tiffany clicked off the set and waited.
I need Ben Lipton on the phone. Tell PR no comment until I say otherwise.
Tiffany hesitated, then put her feet in motion. By the time he was off the phone with his private lawyer, Remington had left a message on his cell, and his secretary in the New York office asked for his instructions. On his way home, he stopped by the florist. Gabby met him at the door with a smirk. Flowers? How cliché.
You saw the news.
She took the red and white roses from his hands and led a path to the kitchen. Everyone saw the news. The phone hasn't stopped ringing since I returned from your office. He studied her movements as she found a vase and filled it with water. He searched for any uncertainty in her actions and found none. Flowers from a cheating husband makes you look guilty, she told him.
And if anyone asks, the day Hayden became public knowledge, I bought my wife flowers and came home early.
It's after 6.
Early for me, he corrected himself.
He shrugged out of his jacket and laid it on the back of a chair. She picked the tiny sealed card from the floral spray and pointed it in his direction. Good thing you're taking me out for dinner.
I am?
You are. Meeting the mother of your son is exhausting, she teased, as she pulled at the edge of the envelope. Gabby's teasing smile fell when she opened the check. What's this? He leaned a hip against the counter.
$1 million for every affair, alleged or proven.
Her eyes narrowed and didn't let his go. I should cash this just to spite you.
A deal is a deal.
How many eyes do you have on him? Gabby lay beside Hunter, her knee draped over his, her hand on his chest drawing circles.
You're asking about another man after that?
She smacked his chest. Hayden, how many eyes do you have on him?
My extended eyes are on Sheila and Noah.
Gabby leaned up on her elbow and her gaze went cold. Before he could utter a word, she leaned her naked body over his and fumbled with the phone on the side table. She shoved the phone into his face. All eyes on Hayden.
What?
The entire free world was told by the media that you have a son. You want the free world to believe he's yours. Would you let your son have less protection than your wife? He sat up in bed, as did Gabby. The sheet pooled around her waist, leaving a picture of beauty he had to ignore.
I have private investigators on Sheila and Noah, not bodyguards.
Gabby placed a hand on her naked hip as she straightened her shoulders. Why do you have bodyguards watching over me?
Someone out there could.
His words trailed off as the point she was trying to make drove home.
Shit.
He tossed the sheet from his spent frame and shoved off the bed as he dialed. His head was so bent on the taking, he'd completely disregarded the target.
McBain. I know it's late, Hunter told Neil as he made his way to the office. I need eyes on...
The moment of decision was on him.
On who?
It was late, but Neil's voice was solid. Hunter clicked on his computer.
My son.
Silence.
The news had the truth for once?
Something told Hunter that eventually Neil and those who knew Gabby would know the truth. Instead of a flat-out lie, he stated what he needed.
Hayden is the innocent one here. I want eyes on him, Neil. I'm here with Gabby and can send Solomon or Connor.
Hunter gave the address he had, the name of the daycare, and the two private investigators working the case so Neil's men didn't mistake them for someone else. By the time he was off the phone, Gabby stood in the doorway, arms crossed over the black flowing robe covering her bare shoulders. You need me, she told him. Her words and stance were flippant, the reality of her statement anything but. The difference between defense and offense is really about the placement of the players on the board. Only for Gabby, her life went from defending her position to taking what she wanted overnight. Hunter met with his lawyers first thing in the morning and Gabby met with hers. Lori ushered her into the office, offered tea and a smile. Looks like we missed an angle in your contract with Blackwell, she said, before Gabby could explain anything.
Hayden wasn't expected.
Lori relaxed in her high-back chair. Something tells me Blackwell knew all about his little bundle before he offered you a contract.
No doubt about it, but that's not why I'm here.
Oh? Gabby opened the folder she'd brought in and held it over Lori's desk.
Everything I say in here is confidential, right?
From the drop of Lori's jaw, she wasn't expecting the question. Completely. Gabby handed her the papers. Lori glanced through the pile as Gabby spoke.
My late husband was a drug smuggler. From the expression on Lori's face, this wasn't new information. She'd been Samantha's lawyer for some time, and if Gabby had to guess, some of the less public information was old news to the attorney. You already knew that, Lori shrugged. What you don't know? What few know is... I killed him. Lori snapped her eyes to Gabby's. He died in the hospital. I pulled the plug. The attorney released a sigh. Telling the doctors to take him off life support isn't the same as killing him. Not according to the life insurance company that paid out after Alonzo's death. Lori flipped through the papers until she found the forms regarding the payout.
That's a big payout.
I cashed the check and then promptly gave the money to a multitude of drug prevention programs. If you look at the fine print in the policy, if my hand was in any way responsible for the death of my spouse, including removing him from life support without a court order, the policy was voided.
Only you cashed the check.
You see my problem. Lori pulled out a legal pad and scribbled a note to herself.
Insurance fraud is a bigger deal than holding up a liquor store and shooting the clerk these days. Big companies are making examples out of anyone caught. We're going to have to proceed with caution.
Gabby hated the fear in her gut. Had I known about the clause, I would never have cashed the check.
Do you have the money to pay it back?
Gabby removed the check Hunter had given her the night before and handed it to Lori.
The attorney laughed. That's a lot of zeros.
I think Hunter is good for them. Lori paperclipped the check to the file and closed it. There's a couple other things I'm dealing with that you might need to know about. Lori held out her hand.
Another file? Gabby shook her head as she leaned over the desk and flipped the pad around. She wrote down the two bank names and account numbers in question.
The first is a bank in Colombia. The second in Italy. Both have my name on them. Well, Gabriella Bacano.
Gabby went on to explain the details she could provide. Limited that they were. You have no idea who dipped into them?
No. The one in Italy had money going in, barely anything coming out. The Colombian one had a steady stream coming and going.
Laundering.
Probably. When I found out about them, I changed the access numbers, and they've been silent ever since.
Lori cringed. Do I even want to know how much is in these accounts?
A lot more than that personal check.
This complicates everything. If the insurance company finds out about the foreign money,
it's not mine.
They don't know that. Lori turned to the computer on her desk and started typing. This is going to take some time. Gabby thought presenting this information was the right direction and would leave her with a sense of accomplishment at the end of the day.
She was wrong. I can't go to jail.
I don't think it will come to that. There was safety in that.
We have to be as quiet as possible about this while we fix it.
Lori was writing a note again. That I can't promise. When was the last time someone as high profile as you are was accused of fraud and it didn't make the evening news?
I'm not high profile.
Lori burst out laughing. You're married to one of the richest and most influential men in the world. You're so high profile, half the people out there will want to see you in jail out of jealousy. The other will assume you're guilty and hiding other crimes that will land you in prison eventually.
Lori took her attention back to the computer and clicked a few buttons. The printer behind her desk sprang to life.
This would have been easier to fight if you weren't married to Blackwell. A widowed socialite done wrong by your dead husband is a lot more sympathetic than the wife of a billionaire.
Gabby went cold. Do you think Hunter knew that?
Lori raised a brow. Did he know about the insurance policy? The accounts?
Gabby didn't answer and Lori shook her head. Hunter didn't get where he is by stupid luck.
Even if he had known,
things had changed, hadn't they? He's not as selfish as it seems.
Lori scoffed.
No, really. Gabby defended him. He's with his lawyers right now working on the immediate removal of Hayden from his mother's custody.
Taking a child from his mother? Sounds noble.
The sarcasm was rich on Lori's tongue. The woman is crazy. Lori tilted her head and stared.
Let me paint this picture a little more clearly. Blackwell wanted a wife to demonstrate to the court what a stable married man he was, and he's working hard to find fault with the child's mother to gain full custody.
She wants money. She doesn't care about the baby.
Is that what she told you? Or him?
Gabby opened her mouth, closed it, then muttered, "I trust him."
Lori pointed directly at her. "That's your first mistake."
"You don't know him."
There was a little less defense in Gabby's tone. "No, you're right, I don't know him, but I know his type. He's rich, arrogant, and will stop at nothing to get what he wants. Men like him bend the law, bribe the law, seduce it even, to reach their goals. You went into this contract cold and detached, Gabby. I suggest you find that woman and bring her back if you want to walk away a whole person. Don't let Blackwell do to you what Picano did."
"That's not possible."
"Are you sure about that?"
Gabby stared at her lawyer and knew the woman gave sound advice. Not that Gabby wanted to hear it.
Back inside the car, Solomon reached inside the glove compartment and removed a small box.
"Neil had this made," he told her, "and he wants you to wear it at all times."
She opened the lid and found a locket on a silver chain.
"Why would Neil be buying me jewelry?"
Solomon laughed as he pulled out into traffic.
"It's a GPS device. As much as one of us will be glued at your side, there are times, like today, where you'll be out of our sight. I meant to give it to you earlier. Sitting in the lobby reminded me that you didn't have it on."
She placed it over her head and looked at the simple design. Fiddling with the latch didn't result in opening it.
"It doesn't open."
"Oh."
Overkill. From bodyguards to lockets.
"It's merely a tracking device, right? It doesn't record what I'm saying?"
Solomon offered a shake of his head.
"Nope, just GPS. It's waterproof, too, so you can shower with it."
With a